Today's episode is brought to you by Musical Theater Radio's merch store. Looking for that perfect gift for someone or just want to treat yourself to some great musical theater themed merch? Head to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the All Things Theater button on the homepage and check out all the different designs available. And now, today's interview. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. I love when guests revisit the show. It's always great to catch up and see what's new. Well, today's guest is the author of the new book, Mary and Ethel and Mikey Who. Mary is Mary Martin, Ethel is Ethel Merman, but Mikey, that is the question I'll let our guest answer today. Let's welcome Stephen Cole to the show. Hello, Stephen.
Hey there, so great to be back. Nice to see you and hear
you. Awesome. Now, we're going to talk all about the book, obviously, but, you know, we got to get the listeners. If they haven't listened to your first interview, we got to get to know who you are again. So, 30 seconds. Who are you once again, Stephen?
Who am I? Gosh. Well, you know, I'm mostly known as a musical theater librettist and lyricist. I've had 14 of my musicals produced, which still shocks me, all over the country, all over the world, you know, all the way to Qatar. And one of the shows is called The Road to Qatar. So I've had some off-Broadway, After the Fair, and Inventing Mary Martin, and The Road to Qatar, and The Night of the Hunter also. So that's sort of who I've been. And I wrote a few nonfiction books along the way. I ghosted Charles Strauss's memoirs for you people who read that. My name is nowhere to be found on that book, but the money was good. And and I'm very proud of that book. And I co-wrote Marnie Nixon's memoirs, I Could Have Sung All Night. She, who never got credit for her singing in the movies, made sure that I got credit for the book. Lovely, lovely lady. And that book about that girl. But along the way, I was writing short stories, which some of which won a few awards and got published. But I thought one day it's time to veer into fiction and a novel. And since I had already done a musical called Merman's Apprentice about Ethel Merman and little Muriel Plackenstein in 1970 and Inventing Mary Martin, I don't know why I thought, you know, here's the final word on my two idols, Mary and Ethel. And by doing that, I got to include that third character, Michael Marvin Minkus. That's who Mikey Who is. And of course, your musical theater fans will get the reference because it's from Bells Are Ringing when they keep saying, oh, I had lunch with Mary and Ethel. Mary and Ethel who? Mary Schwartz and Ethel Hotchkiss. And so that's where the title came from. So that's me.
Nice. And we know you from your shows because I play, I don't know, like five or six of them. So I know you that way. But yeah, when I found out you had the novel, I was like, no, let's see where we're going with your career. So let's start right at the beginning of the book. Was there an aha moment, an impetus to write it? Or was it kind of just you were thinking about all your times, you know, meeting with Ethel and talking with Mary, etc. So which was it?
The aha moment was real. I was sitting on the beach on the Jersey Shore and bemoaning, as usual, the state of musical theater and how hard it was to get a show on. And you write it and it takes 7 years or 8 years or 10 years. And I thought, you know, just stop this already. Write another book. Write, you know, get into some fiction where you don't need a collaborator and you don't need permission to get it on. Of course, you have to find a publisher. But I just thought, what fun this would be. And I thought about Ethel and Mary and their kind of their fake feud over the years, because basically Merman would say things about Mary like, oh, she's okay if you like talent. But I knew from knowing Ethel in the last 2 years of her life and knowing Mary more via correspondence and telephone calls that they were friendly and they were friends. And that was a load of baloney, the whole feud thing, except that Ethel kind of started to take it a little seriously. And, She did try to one up Mary if she could and sing louder when they were on the Overeasy TV show. So I thought there's a story here. And I started out without Mikey, just telling that story through the years. And I sent it to a couple of smart people, both novelists, who said this isn't a novel. It reads like nonfiction. And I said, but it's fiction because I invented the dialogue and the letters, and I wasn't under the bed all the time hearing everything. So I realized that I had to do something to really turn it into a novel. And it was finding that character, that super fan, Michael Marvin Minkus from Brooklyn, New York, who runs to the bedside of his fallen hero, Ethel Merman, in 1983. And I knew I'd be able to use a lot of my real life experiences, but more so, it became a time travel piece, which actually, since it's come out, a couple of people have told me it's really more like an Alice in Wonderland piece because he walks into Ethel Merman's closet and comes out the other end in 1939. So it's a little more like falling down the rabbit hole because it's no machine taking him anywhere. I wrote the time machine already. I wrote that time after time. I've written these things. So it once I got him in there and the magic started to happen, and my favorite character of Mary Two appeared, who was Ethel's nurse when she in fact had the brain tumor. And I knew her for an hour, and she stayed with me, and I thought, oh, this character could go throughout the novel and be a kind of conduit to get him from place to place and time to time, actually, as it were. So I just started having a good time doing it, and it's been a few years, and it kept me busy, and it made me hunger for more fiction. Fiction that is historical, because everything, I would say everything in this book is true, except what isn't. And that's kind of it. That's how it came to be.
Well, as artists, we always thought, write what you know. And you knew Mary, you knew Ethel. But how much of Mikey is you? Is it totally fabricated, or is it 50, 60, 30%? What percentage of Mikey
There is a percentage. I mean, his mother is not my mother, although aspects of her are. My mother did, in fact, wear toilet paper on her head to go to sleep at night to protect her hairdo. I love that. And so there were aspects of my father, although what happens to them, it didn't really happen. And I did have siblings. So there are aspects, and Mikey is not me at that time in the early 80s, because I didn't live under my mother's apartment in the basement next to the washing machine. But I knew that I needed to have this young man grow from 25 to grow up and to leave that awful environment that he was putting himself in. And so I invented things around who he is and who he was. I never had any kind of relationship sexually with Jerome Robbins, which is in the book. But maybe it's wishful thinking. I don't know. He was a genius. But so there are parts. I would say maybe 50%. Maybe 50%. He's a smart guy, and some of the jobs he has along the way, like press agent, I really did that. I really was a press agent. I really did write award shows. So it, like you said, write what you know. Absolutely.
Well, you bring up Jerome Robbins because you bring up so many people from history, not just obviously the lead characters, but everybody. You mentioned so many people. I'm curious, how many of those people did you actually meet over your time?
Oh, well, most of those I did not. They're related to Ethel and Mary's history. So you have to get Irving Berlin in there, and you have Rodgers and Hammerstein, and you have Josh Logan and Leland Hayward, who's one of my favorite characters, because he goes over from 1947 when he's at the Gypsy run-through of Mary Martin's Annie Get Your Gun to the Ford 50th anniversary show. And then, of course, he produced both of their shows. He produced Call Me Madam. He produced South Pacific. He produced The Sound of Music and Gypsy in the same season, which is pretty amazing. So he was kind of an interesting character to write, but I did not know him at all. I was lucky enough just to know all of, I think I met Josh Logan once in the men's room at Christie's when Ethel's effects were all being auctioned off. We stood next to each other. He had not won the thing that he wanted to win, which was the loving cup he gave her in 1939 when she was in Stars in Your Eyes. And we didn't speak, but I met him in the men's room. That's about it.
I'm
So
always
I,
curious. Oh, sorry, go on.
yeah, please. No, that's it. Curious.
Okay.
What are you curious
Well,
about?
I'm always curious when you're writing the book, you write so much stuff. And is there stuff that you left out, plot lines that you thought of and that you want to put in, but for whatever reason you decided not to
Oh,
put in?
sure. There were lots of chapters that went by the wayside, including that one about the auction, including actually a big one, which was the Merman and Martin tribute to themselves that they did in 1977 at the Broadway Theater, which was one of the greatest nights I ever spent in the theater. And I didn't write, I wrote about that, and I took it away because I knew once I got to Hello, Dolly in 1970, Mikey gets to meet himself in this book. He gets to meet his younger self and his parents. And it is Hello, Dolly and Ethel Merman that changes his young life with the relationship with his father. And I knew once I got there and to that, it's really not the opening night, it's the night that the matinee when Ethel did the performance that made it the longest running musical in Broadway history at the time. And when he goes to the party afterwards, he realizes he's done. He's done everything he was meant to do, and it's time to do something for himself and go back to his own time 13 years later. And then how he gets back there is part of the story. But once I thought that's it, that's the climax, I can't really keep going ahead in time to other things. There were fun things that I wanted to do. And there was even a remnant or two it where he one of the things in Ethel's closet before he it's kind of a magical closet, and she has Mary Martin's Tony in there for The Sound of Music. She doesn't have it in there anymore in the book, but she did for a while, and that was because Mary was going to give it to Ethel. And then I thought, no, Ethel was never accepted. So you change as you go along. And so yeah, there are lots of cut chapters and fun stuff.
So we already talked about, you mentioned lots of real people as well. You also mentioned lots of real shows that Mikey gets to go see. And you know what? Just the ones he mentions, I would love to go see. Which one of those would you want to go back and take Mikey's place and go see those shows?
Oh gosh, I take him to see By Jupiter, which would have been wonderful. But at the same time, I think, wait a minute, why isn't he seeing Lady in the Dark? That's the one I'm dying to see. There are so many shows in the early 40s, Pal Joey, that would have been wonderful. And of course, he does go all the way up into the 50s. There's so many other things. He gets to be the fly on the wall at that gypsy run through of Annie Get Your Gun. I don't know what else. I would want to see Gypsy, of course, and The Sound of Music and Destry Rides Again. That whole season,
Yeah.
he would have no time to write the Tony Awards because he'd be going to the shows all the time. So it is kind of a wonderful fantasy, isn't it? And to go back to those years. And of course, he's sitting there next to Ethel Merman and Cole Porter at Leave It to Me, at the final performance Mary Martin gives. Wow. Just wow. So that was a lot of fun to think about when he actually figures out that it's Cole Porter sitting there stamping his foot to his own music. Wow.
These are, like I said, these are real people. How did you get into the minds? How did you decide their tone, what they say? Did you do a lot of research on each one of them and then just go, I think it would be this? Or what was your
Yeah, I mean,
experience like?
starting from the top, I did know Ethel and Mary, so that wasn't very hard at all, even though much of it is invented. to write letters to people at, in the voice of the people. That was a lot of fun and challenging. Cole Porter also writes a couple of letters. I've just been a I've been a Cole Porterite my whole life. You know, ever since, because he's the guy who taught me how to write lyrics. He wasn't alive, but those lyrics taught me what great lyrics should be, and so I emulated him. So I knew his voice. I guess I just knew all these voices. This is part of my whole life of being a historian and loving these people. And I hope I hit them all right. I'm sure, you know, Leland Hayward, I don't think I ever heard him for real, but I've read so much about him in books about him, but also about his wives and how interesting that was. I was going to have more about, you know, Slim Hayward, one of his wives, who I find fascinating, and who winds up now on the feud thing with Truman Capote. She's one of the swans, but she was fascinating because she was married to him during the 50s and was very influential. So, and Robbins, you know, I feel like I knew him. I feel like it just somehow. I guess the people who the one who is the most not like herself is my mother. Completely different woman. I kind of caricatured her up to make her more fun.
Is there any points in the book where that you wrote that just make you smile because it reminds you of your time with Ethel and communicating with Mary?
Yeah, they make me smile and they also make me cry. I still can cry at my own book. I was just before talking to you, reading a section like that section right after Hello, Dolly, when he sees his father and himself leaving that theater, the happiest they had ever been. And I saw Ethel and Hello, Dolly, so I know what that feeling was like. But these two combining and then going to the theater weekly to see things like Promises, Promises and Applause and things like that in that period, and a father and a son doing that. Oddly enough, it was my mother who took me to the theater. It's not my I'm the only show I can remember seeing with my real father was Applause. We went to a Wednesday matinee. He was off one week from work, and I remember him turning to me and saying, "How come this theater is filled with only women?" It was a Wednesday matinee in those days. That's who went. So I do, and the scene where towards the end of the book in the epilogue, when Mikey brings Ethel flowers when she has a brain tumor and she's talking out of the side of her mouth, and he reminds her of a song she sang in 1936, and she opens her mouth and sings it as if, well, that really happened. So when I
Wow.
read that, it's very touching, and I love it, and it does make me smile. The fact that I, oddly enough, I had spoken to other biographers over the years, merman biographers, and would tell them that story, and not one of them used it. And so I thought that was one of the reasons I said, "Oh, this is really mine. It was staying just for me to write in this book, even though I could have made it up, I didn't." And the idea of how Mary was, I got from phone calls and from letters, that kind of the opposite of merman, the opposite of that forthright out there lady. Mary was kind of sweet and vague and would get things out of you the way she wanted you to. She could manipulate you in lovely ways as opposed to just do this for me, which would have been Ethel. So I do read the book. I go back and when I listen to it, you know, there's an audio book. There's an audio book that is performed by the great Anita Gillette, the Broadway star. And Anita, who had been in Gypsy with Ethel, really knew all these people. I mean, she was directed in two shows by Josh Logan. She knew Irving Berlin very well. They were good friends. So when she read the book, and recorded it and performed it, it's as if, oh my God, she really did know these people. And the only time she ever called me up, she said, I'm recording and I don't know what to do for Edward R. Murrow's voice." So I sent her a recording. Him, she didn't know, but she got everybody else. And she, when I first heard the beginning of the book, First, I laughed really loud because she was just so funny as my mother. And it just also made me cry. I thought, wow, that she's captured it. Let's get a Grammy for Anita next year for best audiobook. She is fantastic. So
This
that makes me happy.
that's great, but this book, it'll be able to touch so many different people on so many different levels through so many different time periods, because like you said, you lived knowing the two lead characters, the woman who read it performed with them, and then there's people who know the shows and can discover the shows, and so the book is wonderful on so many different levels and will touch people on so many different ways because either they experienced it, lived through it, got to see Gypsy as their first matinee. And so it's wonderful, and congratulations on that and
Well,
bringing
thank you.
so
And
many
I
others.
appreciate that. And as it grew, I realized it was also a coming of age story for Mikey, which almost anybody can really feel. How do you get out from under your mother's basement? And how do you start to live your real life? And that's why it was it I've never written anything like a sex scene in a book, but I did it very carefully and lovingly, and how Robin's being the experienced man with this young guy who's 25 years old and very and totally innocent. And I thought, wow, I had to tap into my memories there a little bit, but because we all have them. But I thought this is also a part of the book, and also how musical theater can change your life, and how it is a healing and restorative thing, and why we all listen to show music, and why we all love those great things. Why, when you just sit down and listen to Hello, Dolly, and hear, put on your Sunday clothes, it's telling you everything about life. I always feel that everything I learned about life, I learned from my original cast albums. I would listen, I learned real words, I learned who real people were. Who knew who Bernard Havard is in the lyric of Gentlemen Fur Blondes. I had years later look up, who he was, but it made me want to look things up, and I'd go to the library and figure that out. We didn't have Google in those days, listening to real records. But I know there are people now who are listening to theater music and realizing how it can change your point of view, and also just restore you. It's such a restorative when it's good. When it's really good. And when you listen to that original cast of Gypsy and hear that overture, how can you not think life is great? And that's part of the book, I think. And these were the
And
two greatest stars, the two greatest practitioners. Let's face it, it's not going to happen again, the Ethel and Mary. But they also are part of, and I mentioned this and that, they're part of what I call the freak show. And I mean it in the best way, because nowadays, you get a lot of actors who you can interchange everybody, all the stars in Wicked, they have over 20 years, but you could never replace either of those dames. You tried, but you couldn't. They were such originals. And also, I think if they showed up today at an audition, people would go, oh, no, they're too special. Forget it. But they were special. That's what they were.
100%. So you're writing the novel. You obviously, it's going to have a book. It's going to be published. In the back of your head, are you thinking, this could be a stage musical? Have you been in your back of your head going, staging it slightly?
No.
No.
No. Mostly because I didn't even think that when I wrote the short story Merman's Apprentice. I just
Okay.
gave it to a couple of people to read, and one composer said, hey, this should be this. But that one was such a simple musical fable, and really about the little girl learning from Ethel. In this case, because everything we just mentioned, all of these real people and all of these real situations, it feels too difficult to put on the stage, to give it an actual life. A TV film. Oh, yes. Feud, Ethel and Mary. That's what I see. I see that. I've even been talking about doing a podcast series of it. So it would be like an old-fashioned radio series, which I think are great. And then if you have all those fabulous real people, you have actors playing them, and people can imagine what it was like backstage at the Imperial Theater. I mean, Sophie Tucker, come on. Where am I going to put all these? And without those people on the stage, without the whole story happening, I think it would become small, and it's rather big now. It's just big and epic. And the fact that we can go, one of my favorite scenes in the book is in the 1960, while Mary is collecting her Tony Award at the Astor Hotel, Ethel is at home, knowing she's not going to win, and she invites several of her friends. Now, I did know Maria Karnilova because Ethel brought her to my house. She was the golden fiddler on the roof, and Tessie Tura, and she was a delight. So it was fun to write her. I did know Bene Venuta, Ethel's best friend, who also had replaced her in Anything Goes, and she had a wonderful filthy mouth like Ethel. And I did not know Dorothy Fields, but I put them all together at this hen party in Ethel's apartment, where the women get together to calm her down because she knows she's not going to win the Tony for Gypsy, which a lot of people thought she should, or at least tie. And as Maria Karnilova says, when Gypsy and Fiorello both tie as best, not Gypsy, pardon me, The Sound of Music and Fiorello tie as best musical, Maria Karnilova says, we didn't even make second place. And imagine Gypsy not even making second place. So
That's crazy.
it's crazy. And what's been revived? Well, they keep doing that show. Keep doing that. But so it was fun writing those things. And but boy, would those be hard to put on a stage. So that's my thought. And also, once again, I got away with it in Merman's Apprentice to not have songs that they introduced, that Ethel introduced. It was all completely original score by David Evans and myself. And we wrote songs when we needed songs to be like Ethel, they were like Ethel, but it was more character driven. In this case, how could you skip these wonderful shows? So let's make a TV movie.
But if you could get the songs from them, what a cast recording that would be of all those songs put together,
Yeah,
all those shows.
absolutely. And I really am kind of excited by the idea of a podcast radio version, I think. And we'll do it in pieces and just get all of our great Broadway friends to play. There's Clea Blackhurst just sitting there waiting to
Awesome.
Ethel.
So, how do people find the book? What I need the who, what, where, how to find the book,
Oh
how to
my
find more
goodness.
about you.
So there's lots of places to find it. Obviously, you could go to Amazon, and where it is in hardcover, Kindle, which is a bargain, $9.99. I think I read everything on Kindle. And audiobook done by Anita Gillette, also a bargain. There are even on the Amazon page, you'll see, by the way, 23 rave reviews. I'm really happy. Five stars, five stars. And you can see there how to get it even a little cheaper than the hardcover. There are ways to do that. And of course, find me on Facebook or Instagram, and I'm happy to sell you one and even mail you an autographed copy. We're doing a thing this week at the Museum of Broadway. Clea Blackhurst and I are doing what you and I just said. We're going to sit down and just have a little conversation about the book. I'm going to show some Ethel and Merman videos. I got a couple of rare things to show there, and then I'll do a little reading from the book, which is kind of fun. And then we'll also play a little of the audiobook because Anita Gillette is going to come, and I intend to ask her about her Ethel Merman experience in Gypsy, which I can tell you secondhand. Okay, so she was in Gypsy. She's 20 years old. She is standing by for Dainty June. And Dewey being a Hollywood blonde, and she gets pregnant. She was married. She got pregnant. And David Merrick said, "Well, good. I'm glad you're pregnant. You're fired." And Merman said, "Hey, hold off." And she said, "The kid stays in the show as long as she can still do the splits." And Anita stayed in the show for 6 months after that. And every night she'd go back to Merman's dressing room, and Merman would feel her stomach and say, "You're still small enough. You can do the show." So she has this fabulous memory of Ethel being so sweet to her, and being so solicitous, and fighting back David Merrick, which was a big thing. Only Ethel was able to do that. So I'm hoping Anita will tell that story, and then also her other Merrick story, when she replaced Anna Maria Alberghetti in Carnival. David Merrick put a marquee up with her name above the title, Anita Gillette Inn. And then when Anna Maria came back, they put back Anna Maria's marquee, and he sent a bill to Anita for her marquee. That's a great story. So she did know everybody. And so we're so lucky to have her. And she's kind of in the family of the project. And so we're doing that. And so we're going to sell books there. I'm going to sell books out on Long Island at a synagogue. I'm going to do the same thing. This is what you do when you're a famous author. You go out there and stand in the street and sell your books. And hope for them. And I love autographing them. And I also have a bunch of Rhodes Scholars that I take around to see Broadway shows. And they bought some last week. So that was great. I always tell people
Nice.
when I autograph it, it's worth less.
Do you have anything in the pipeline that you want to talk about or promote?
Oh yeah, you know, during this whole time, obviously I've still been doing shows, writing shows, and my most recent musical that premiered in July in Dallas, Texas, where a lot of my shows premiere, was called Goin' Hollywood, and it's written with great David Crane, who wrote The Road to Qatar with me, and we wrote an original musical, and it happens to have time travel in it, but in a very weird way. It's about these two writers who hate the 21st century, go to lunch at a restaurant at Grand Central Station, and it's called the Super Chief Dining Car, and it's a complete replica. And as the woman makes her wish for her on her 30th birthday, the car starts moving and takes them across country and back to 1949, and they get to work at MGM. And
Wow.
so it's all about that. So most of the show is 1949 MGM, but it's one of those, be careful what you wish for, because as wonderful as it is to think, wow, they make movies like Singin' in the Rain and American in Paris, they also make things like The Blacklist, and they have to endure that. So it's a great show, and it got rave reviews in Texas. So now we're trying to get it to the next steps. We're going off to London to talk to a couple of producers there, because they say it's a little cheaper to get a show on than on Broadway, they say. And it's a big fat Broadway musical. It's not one of my small shows. And it's really, I'm so damn proud of it. So that's happening. What I will write next, who knows? I've been so enamored with this book, Mary and Ethel and Mikey Who, that I thought, couldn't it have a sequel? What about, and we just lost one of my favorite stars, Chita Rivera, who starred in my show Casper. And I thought, what about Chita and Gwen and Mikey Who? What about those shows? Because their paths, of course, crossed several
Yeah.
times, but especially Chicago, which was an amazing event. So we'll see. At the end of the book, we have a young Ethel Merman showing up. So I have to maybe get her back to 1930. There's a lot of things to, but it all depends on if the publisher says, sure, we sold 1 million copies, please do a sequel. But if he says we didn't, I may have to come up with another book.
Well, we'll see. With this podcast, maybe you'll get halfway to a million. I don't know. We'll find
Yeah,
out.
yeah.
We'll
Let's
see what we can do.
make it happen. I feel that any musical theater fan that doesn't read this is crazy because it's so much fun. And that's what I've been hearing from people I know, or people I don't know, is that it's a joy ride. It's a fun thing to, and you feel like you're part of it, and you go, why can't I do that? Where's that closet I could walk into? And so I'm very proud of that aspect.
Well, congratulations on the book. It is great. And I got a chance to read it, obviously. And yeah, I'm a big fan of yours. We play your stuff. The book is great. So congratulations. Before you go, I do have one more question.
Sure.
Is this based on a true story? Was there an actual time travel portal in Ethel Merman's apartment? You can just tell us.
Well, you know, I interestingly, when she died, her son called me up, her son Bobby, and he said, do you want her closet? And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get all those dresses she wore on Johnny Carson. And he meant all the wood that was built into this built-in closet. And I was like, no, nah, I don't need her closet. But then I went over to the house, just the closet disfigured. And I opened up her closet door, and it was a big walk-in closet. And there was a box of records in there. And
Oh.
that box of records were her private recordings. I went through them, and they became two volumes of a CD called Mermania that I produced, which were her private recordings. And so it was kind of a time portal when you think about it. And I'll tell you the weirdest thing that was in that box. Two things knocked my socks off, and they're on Mermania Volume One for people who don't have that. And those are the two songs that she added after the opening of Happy Hunting. There were two songs that were put in that are not on the record,
Oh.
and she had recordings of them, and they're wonderful. So they're both on there, and they were not written by the original authors, but by her friend Roger Edens. And the other amazing thing in the box was a huge playback disc which said Rosalind Russell in Gypsy, and it was all her original tracks, and it was before they were ever released anywhere. And when I played that, it made me laugh because time traveled back to this party that I don't know if it happened, but Ethel took that record, put it on for her friends, and said, "Listen to her singing my song. She's terrible." And that, so I thought that's that. Because she's not, she was dubbed by Lisa Kirk eventually, but these were the real tracks. And what were they doing in Ethel's closet? That's what I wanted.
That's crazy. What a find. What,
Yeah.
wow.
So that was the time machine closet. So yeah, true story. Absolutely. The apartment, who owns the apartment now at the Surrey Hotel, who can go back somewhere? They probably have no clue when they go into that closet that they can go
That's so
somewhere.
true. Wow. I'm going to take that as you haven't denied it, so maybe it is true. there is a time portal. Stephen, thank you again so much. It's so great to catch up with you. Like I said at the beginning, I love having past guests on because there's something they've done, and I'm always excited to hear
Oh, well,
what's
I'm
happened and
so
what's coming.
thrilled to be back. And yeah, if you're not just some, old dead person, you have to keep working. And there's still new shows and there's new books. I have another novel sitting waiting, and it's the complete opposite. It's very serious. It has theatrical things in it, but I haven't gotten anybody interested yet. But I think it's even better. So we'll see. It has no Ethel Merman or Mary Martin in it, though. And they help you sell the book.
Wow. Again, thank you, Stephen, for coming on, and I look forward to catching up next time. You got something to promote?
Thank you so much, Jean-Paul. It was wonderful talking
Awesome.
to you. Bye-bye.
All right. We've just been speaking with Stephen Cole, the author of the new book, Mary and Ethel and Mikey Who. You can find that on Amazon. You can get the audiobook, the hard copy, the Kindle version. Anywhere that fine books are sold, you can probably find him, even contact him. Like he said, I think the signature is worth something. So get him to sign it if you can.
Yeah,
All
sure.
right. Tune in next week as we'll speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion that is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Jovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.